on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower, here till 5 a.m. And that, of course, was Michael Jackson and the song Human Nature, which is my favorite solo Michael Jackson song of all time, from the album Thriller, of course. And if you think that you've read everything that you could possibly read about Michael Jackson, that's not true. If you haven't read Michael Jackson FAQ, All That's Left to Know About the King of Pop, by my guest Kit O'Toole. I read the book and I thought it was great. Really, lots of stuff that I didn't know, ranging from influences to going from the Jackson 5 all the way through up until posthumous stuff as well. It is a very remarkably thorough book. And if you're a fan of Michael Jackson, this is a must buy. And I want to welcome the author, Kit O'Toole, to the show. Hello, Kit.
Hi, Nick. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Let's talk a little bit about you. You're a music journalist, you write a lot of freelance stuff, pop culture stuff. Tell me about how you got started in that world.
Well, I've been writing about music for probably 20 years, and I didn't start pursuing it seriously until about, I'd say like 2008, when I started writing for a site, which is still online, called Blog Critics. Mm-hmm. And it's a site that covers, pop culture, politics, sports, you name it. And I started reviewing for them. And as I said, I had been doing some writing before. I am a contributing editor for Beatle Fan Magazine. And before that, I'd written for a now defunct paper called Showcase Chicago, kind of like The Reader and New City. And so I got into the world of blogging, and it was just an exciting thing. And worked for Blog Critics for a few years, and then I moved on to two blogs that I still write for now, Blinded by Sound, where I write a soul column, and also Something Else Reviews, where I write about my other passion, the Beatles, as you may have guessed from mm-hmm. Beatles fan. And I write a column for that called Deep Beatles, where I look at the lesser-known songs, the ones that weren't the hits.
Before we get into the Michael Jackson book, which is what we're here to talk about, I love this series, by the way, the FAQ series.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're great. Backbeat Books puts them out, I really like this series, and this is one of the ones that I enjoyed very much. And I'm not, I will say this, Kit, I am not the biggest Michael Jackson fan in the world, and I read this entire book.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
Yeah, let me, before we get into the Michael Jackson, I happen to be a huge Beatles fan.
I know you are.
And I love the idea that you write about their lesser known tracks.
Mm-hmm.
How did that start for you? Did you have a conversation with somebody and mention a song and they go, I've never heard that song before, and your mind was blown?
Well, you know what? It was really as I said, I've been writing about them for so long, and it's so hard to find an angle of what hasn't been written about the Beatles,
Right.
So I was thinking about it, and I thought, there are songs like I Call Your Name that you never hear about, Mm-hmm. I mean, you might read about them in some of the more, hardcore books about the Beatles, the real, covering every single thing, but you never hear them on the radio. They were never hits. And I just think they are important, too, because they really show, how the Beatles developed over time. And I thought these songs deserve more attention, So I just started writing this column and got a terrific response. People writing, leaving comments saying, I'd totally forgotten about that song. I never thought about it that way. And I thought, well, gosh, give the people what they want. And so I've been writing it for a few years now. And, and I'm sure you feel the same way. You always learn something new about the Beatles.
No, there's no question about it. And you got a book out of it.
I did. I have collected a bunch of my Deep Beatles columns, as well as some stuff I wrote for back when I was with Blog Critics. The book's called Songs We Were Singing, Guided Tours Through the Beatles' Lesser-Known Tracks, and that's because that's precisely what it is. Mm-hmm. And really, it was great to finally put out a Beatles book. I'd always wanted to do it, and finally did it back in August.
Do you have a few favorite deep cuts from the Beatles, and even from their solo records?
Oh, Oh, gosh. I mean, there's so many. As I mentioned, I Call Your Name is one of my favorites because that was, an experiment with reggae. Hey, Bulldog.
Yeah.
I mean, that was fun to write about because I've always wanted to. I thought, what an underrated song that is. One of the chapters in the book, I talk about what I think, and this is, I hope that nobody listening is going to be throwing eggs at the radio when I say this, but the Paul McCartney's Press to Play album, I think there are some hidden gems on there.
I agree with you.
Yeah, thank you.
I agree with you. I think Press to Play is a wildly underrated record.
It really is. And it's constantly, I mean, I can't tell you when I wrote about it, the comments I got. There were some people who said, I agree with you, and there were others, how could you write about that trash?
Yeah.
That was the worst thing you ever recorded. I mean, you either love it or hate it.
Yeah. And I'm a Paul guy. I've always been a Paul guy. I know it's, everybody, when I say I'm a Paul guy, they're like, no, it's John. And my producer, by the way, is a George guy. So you gotta love him for that. but yeah, I'm a Paul guy. I unapologetically love so many of the songs. And I gotta tell you, kids, some of my favorite stuff that Paul McCartney ever did, besides the Beatles stuff, is with Wings. I love those albums. I think Venus and Mars and Band on the Run are two phenomenal records.
Absolutely. And even some of the other ones like London Town and some of those that weren't as consistent, say Band on the Run, there were always, as I said, some hidden gems in there.
Absolutely. Red Rose Speedway.
Yeah.
I mean, has some great stuff on it too. So I'm a fan of the Paul. I have to pick up the book and see the songs. It's called Songs We Were Singing, Guided Tour Through the Beatles' Lesser Known Tracks, which is also out there and available. Mm-hmm. And you can check that out. Let me ask you, as a Beatle fan, and I always try to ask Beatles fans this, have you seen the movie? And if so, do you like it? Have you seen Across the Universe?
I have to admit, I've never seen the whole thing, and I've seen parts of it, and I will say I was expecting it. I mean, you kind of feel like you've been burned before by the Sgt. Pepper movie. You think, oh no, they're trying another Beatles movie. But actually, there were some interesting segments in there, and one thing that I really like about it is that it brought younger fans.
Yeah.
It really introduced the music to younger fans, and if a movie can do that, I am all for it.
I love the movie, kid.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. I think Julie Taymor did a great job. I think the versions of the songs are interesting, and they range from really great to very good.
Absolutely.
I'm a huge fan of that movie, and it's really funny, kid, because when I ask Beatles fans, especially people who really love the Beatles, about that movie, so many of them have the same response that you just had,
mm-hmm.
which is, I haven't seen it. And I think what you touched on was the reason why so many people have avoided it.
Exactly.
Is because, the Beatles in movies, besides, Hard Day's Night and stuff like that, other people other than the Beatles doing movies involving the Beatles, it's not been very successful.
No, and you find, it's sort of an occupational hazard, when you've been researching and writing for so long. Like when I saw Backbeat in the 90s.
Yes.
Which was pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
But I remember sitting there and I just would think, John would never say that.
Right.
Or that was, actually the way that occurred was, and I thought, and I had to really tell myself to stop it. But you find yourself doing that because the Beatles story is so, it has been chronicled so much.
Right.
That it's, how are you possibly going to capture that?
Right. Well, I highly recommend seeing the Across the Universe from beginning to end. I think it's like I said, the music, the way they handle the Beatles music in there is remarkable. But I also think that it's a nice encapsulation of how the Beatles have helped people through a long period, through that 10-year period.
Right, absolutely.
So I actually kind of adore that movie.
Wow. All right, Nick, I will give it another chance.
Okay, cool. So Songs We Were Singing, Guided Tour Through the Beatles' Lesser Known Tracks. And it's interesting because, you mentioned Paul McCartney.
Mm-hmm.
He had an interesting relationship, collaboration relationship with Michael Jackson, which is covered in detail in FAQ in your book.
Yeah.
We're going to get into that and a lot more. So hang on, okay, Kit?
All right.
All right. Kit O'Toole is with us. She's a writer, a pop culture writer, a music journalist. Her latest book is called Michael Jackson FAQ, All That's Left to Know About the King of Pop. A terrific book. And she's going to have a book signing on Saturday, December 5th. At Catalyst Ranch, which is at 656 West Randolph. And it starts at 3 o'clock. And we'll tell you more about that and the book coming up right after we take this break here on 720 WGN.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. I'm sorry. It's Nick DiGilio, by the way, and we're talking about a book called Michael Jackson FAQ, All That's Left to Know About the King of Pop. The author is Kid O'Toole. And you've probably never heard that version of Mama Told Me Not to Come. And I think for good reason. That's the Jackson 5 covering Mama Told Me Not to Come. And I would have not known about that incredible piece of music had it not been for the fact that I read Michael Jackson FAQ by Kit O'Toole. Kit, I want to thank you for including that because it's magical. it's funny because you cover covers in it. And one of the many, many, many things that you cover in this exhausting book, not exhausting, but exhaustively researched book. Mm-hmm. Can we, before we jump into the other covers and things that you've covered in the book, I have to, and I read about it in the book, but tell everybody about how this happened.
Well, it's really a case of another song that they covered. It sort of happened the same way, and it's an equally weird cover, Doctor My Eyes. They did that by, of course, Jackson Browne.
Right.
Just incredible. You know, essentially what it was that Motown would, they just looked at what was popular at the time, I mean, they would just go and say, okay, what's doing well on the charts right now? Oh, okay, Dr. My Eyes, or, Mama Told Me Not to Come. Yeah, those are really big hits now. And so, let's have the Jackson 5 do covers of them, and they'll be big hits. They'll trick the kids. And they were just so age-appropriate, weren't they?
I mean, for people who don't know, Mama Told Me Not to Come, written by Randy Newman, and the big hit was for Three Dog Night, obviously. But the song is about a guy at a party who's high or tripping. His girlfriend is passed out on the floor. It's an inappropriate place for the Jackson 5 to be, especially Michael.
Indeed, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's one of those "what were they thinking" moments.
And I'm telling you, I was reading the book, and I just immediately went to YouTube to hear it, and I was just beside myself. And I found myself doing that a lot during the reading of the book. Like, I had never seen Ghosts, before, and I barely even knew about it until I read the book, and I went and I watched as much as I could handle of it. So there are many, many things I didn't know. And again, I'm not the biggest Michael Jackson fan in the world, but this book is chock full of stuff. Tell me, first of all, how long did it take you to put this thing together?
Oh, gosh. It took probably close to 2 years. Mm-hmm. And I had, as you just pointed out, a lot to go through. But the thing is, and this is one of the reasons I wrote the book, is there is so, there are books about Michael out on the market, but not many of them talk about the music, mm-hmm. Which you think, well, wait a minute, that's, that was his contribution. That's why he's a legend. And so as I was doing this book, I thought, gosh, this is great. There aren't many books out there on Michael's music, so I'm really going to, fill a gap. The bad news was there aren't a lot of books out there on Michael Jackson's music. So I really had my work cut out for me with really researching, doing, a lot of listening. But I found some great things like what you just played. I mean, there were just these little, these cover songs, some of the shows they did, some of the variety shows, which were hysterical.
Yeah.
And some were really cool. I don't mean that the whole book is making fun, because really there's some great stuff. But then there's a great, great footage of them on an, later in the 70s on an ABBA special where they're singing around a snowman. I mean, you can't make this stuff up.
Well, it was, the 70s were a very special time.
That's right. Yeah, it was a special time. You're right.
Yeah. So you cover it from the beginning, the influences that the Jackson 5 had, and essentially this book, as you just mentioned, is about the music. If you want, some sort of tabloid-esque kind of thing about Michael Jackson, who obviously had a very strange life and some very strange events, that's not what it's about. This book focuses entirely on the music, which is probably why I couldn't put the thing down. So you're talking about from the beginning with the influence. Talk a little bit about how the Jackson 5 got together and their influences.
Well, I mean, it's really, and I have to sort of summarize this, but you'll read about it in the book, that it's a very complicated story about how the Jackson Five got together. I mean, they obviously, you know, this has been well chronicled, that their father, you know, got them together. Their father had been in a band that, you know, didn't, you know, really go anywhere. And so he had his sons, you know, who early on showed incredible musical talent, you know, form this act. And one of the things, you know, I talk about in this book is, you know, how they really worked their way up. I mean, they played tiny clubs. They ended up recording, and this is a whole other story, you know, for the tiny Indiana label Steeltown, and that didn't really go anywhere. I mean, they had a lot of false starts before they were finally, you know, signed by Motown. And by the way, I can say this, you know, Diana Ross did not discover them. That was the story.
Right. And I had not known the details of that. I had heard that that wasn't absolutely true. But the details behind it are you bring out in the book, and there were many things about that whole story that I didn't know.
Yeah, I mean, it was actually several people that that discovered them. I mean, you know, there were even some Chicago connections, you know, two DJs at WVON. You know, they ended up, they owned a club at the time, so they would have the band perform at the club. And I mean, it just was a number of people that ended up bringing Gladys Knight and the Pips. Mm-hmm. Figure in there too. Mm-hmm. They first brought the Jackson 5 to Berry Gordy's attention, and at first Berry Gordy said, "I don't want to sign up a bunch of kids, you know, I mean, you're dealing with labor laws and that sort of thing." So he said, "I don't want to deal with a bunch of kids." But as they started, you know, making more noise and winning talent contests and everything, then, you know, they couldn't be denied. And this part, I mean, it's been chronicled many times, but they, you know, they taped an audition with Michael. They did I Got the Feeling, and Michael performed. I mean, James Brown was one of his biggest influences, which does not come as a surprise,
right.
And did just a flawless, you know, James Brown. And he was just a little kid. I mean, it's just astounding. You can see the clip on YouTube. It's just phenomenal.
Yep.
And that's how they were discovered. So it was a long, even though they were kids, it was a long process they had to go through until they finally, you know, reached Motown, and then that, you know.
And it was packaged as like Diana Ross. I mean, they went out of their way to say it was Diana Ross. I mean, the album, the first album where they were introduced, has Diana Ross on it.
Absolutely. And Diana Ross wrote an essay about how she went to a, you know, she saw them. I think it was in an Indiana gym and everything. None of that happened.
Right.
None of it. I mean, you know, Berry Gordy, and wisely so, said, hey, you know, this is a brand new group. Nobody's heard of them. Diana Ross, huge star. Having her endorsement will bring them to people's attention. Mm-hmm. And guess it worked.
And in covering the Jackson 5 section of the book and the Jacksons section of the book, that's two different things, it's in incredible detail. You have virtually every television appearance listed in the book and detailed.
Mm-hmm.
You have every concert that they ever did. And it was so much fun to look back and see the area concerts here, like the Airy Crown for 6 nights and,
mm-hmm.
you know, and things like that. It was like, I believe they played the Mill Run.
Yeah. I know. They played interesting places.
Yeah, they did. And, of course, mm-hmm. the amphitheater, which is, you know, no longer around, legendary place. But you go in through all that, and then what I think some people always will associate the Jacksons with Motown. But, in fact, when they became the Jacksons, they were no longer with Motown.
That's right. They, you know, by about 75, you know, Motown just didn't know what to do with them. I mean, Michael was obviously not cute little Michael Jackson anymore. He was a teenager.
Yeah.
And they had a hard time figuring out how exactly to market them, how to give them the right kind of material. You know, sales started going down, the quality of the albums started going down. And so they, the Jacksons and their father said, you know, we've had enough of this. They were starting to write their own stuff. They, you know, they wanted to record some of that on their albums. And Motown, you know, famously, Motown had complete control over the artists with only a couple of exceptions.
Right.
And they said, no, you will record what we want you to record. So finally they said, we've had enough of this. So they ended up switching to CBS Records. Now, this was quite a tumultuous time. Jermaine Jackson decided not to go with them. He decided to stay with Motown. then one of the conditions of breaking their contract with Motown was Berry Gordy said, I own the name the Jackson 5. You can't use that. So they had to change their name to the Jacksons. So here, and then they added Randy Jackson, their younger brother. And so they had to kind of reintroduce themselves, you know, to the public and try to rebuild their careers and try to communicate that they weren't the, you know, the little kids anymore.
Right.
And it was not easy. You know, they had some false starts before they finally, you know, hit their stride in the late 70s.
Yeah, and they did hit their stride. They had some hits as the Jacksons, and they toured successfully as the Jacksons as well. And I love that, you know, it was so detailed, Kit. Like, you include when Jermaine showed up, when he wasn't there, or when, you know, all of that stuff is detailed. Now, what went into finding all the details that you have in this book? There are so many of them.
Yeah, I really had to consult all different sources, both, you know, some books addressed it, but also some, you know, what I call sort of fan literature, you know, stuff. There are, thank goodness, some really dedicated fans out there that have websites. One wrote a book, and they really, you know, tried to chronicle as best they could all these different dates. Problem was they didn't always match. You know, memories aren't always, you know, the clearest.
Right.
So I had to do a lot, you know, double-checking, triple-checking. I mean, it was sometimes it didn't, you know, the sources wouldn't match. So it was a project, I'll tell you. But I wanted to make this. I mean, it is called All That's Left to Know About the King of Pop.
Yeah, and it's all there. I'm telling you. I had to do it. You did a great job. Kit, hang on, okay?
Sure.
Kit O'Toole is with us. She's the author of Michael Jackson, FAQ, All That's Left to Know About the King of Pop. If you are a fan of Michael Jackson or you know a fan of Michael Jackson's, this is a must-have book and a fantastic gift for the holidays for Michael Jackson fans. By the way, I'm not a big Michael Jackson fan. I read this thing cover to cover. It's that good a book. All right, we'll take a quick break, and we'll talk more with Kit O'Toole about Michael Jackson FAQ right after we take a break here on 720 WGN.
Did you ever stop to notice this drying earth?
Morning, everybody. Hi, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. That is Earth Song by Michael Jackson, and there is a section in the new book, Michael Jackson FAQ, All That's Left to Know About the King of Pop, which is about all the songs that he wrote that were protest songs or songs that were actually about something, songs with messages, message songs. And that's one of them, and that's covered in this book as well. The author is Kit O'Toole. We welcome Kit back. Welcome back, Kit.
Oh, thank you very much.
Let's talk a little bit now. Tonight, Thursday night, tonight, we are going to be able to watch The Wiz live.
Yes, indeed.
On NBC tonight, later on tonight. And I, for one, am going to watch it. One of the major things that happened in Michael's career happened when he played the Scarecrow in the film version of The Wiz back in 1978. Talk a little bit about that, and then and talk about the connection that he made, a major connection.
Absolutely. This was a career-changing moment. Well, he, you know, accepted the part in The Wiz because he was starting at this point. Michael wanted to, you know, kind of reignite his solo career. I mean, he had had a solo career with Motown a bit, with, you know, with moderate success, but he wanted to you know, start doing his own thing.
His biggest success solo-wise at that point was a song about a rat.
Yeah, exactly. So. I mean, you know, it was, yeah, and I have a little bit about that in the book, too, that
right.
People enjoy. But yeah, so he, you know, was looking to establish himself, you know, just reignite his career. So the first step in doing this was being in The Wiz. And, you know, and I think he did a phenomenal
He's
job.
He's terrific in the movie.
He really was.
Yep.
Just natural. And I mean, not surprisingly, his dancing was fantastic. But just the whole thing. And he really enjoyed the experience. Well, one gentleman that he met on the set was Quincy Jones.
Mm.
And Quincy Jones was the music supervisor for The Wiz. And, you know, they got to know each other. And as they started talking, Michael said to him, gosh, you know, I want to record a solo album, and I don't know, you know, who to get to produce. And Quincy said, what about me?
Mm.
And Michael said, really? You know, and it was interesting at the time. This was, you know, it's hard to believe now because we associate the two of them so closely,
right.
But that was not an obvious choice. I mean, Quincy was still known primarily for jazz.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, people thought he's going to produce a pop record. I mean, that what is he doing? Well, what he said to him was, "I want to really surround you with some, you know, top players, top session players. Get some of the best songs we can. I want you to sing in a lower register. I want you to explore your whole range, and I want to really get you away from the bubblegum pop image. You know, I want you to be, this is your statement as a mature, you know, full-fledged artist."
Right.
And Off the Wall was the result of that.
And then they followed that up, and it goes into great detail about the pressure that there was to follow up Off the Wall, because people might not remember, because I think, you know, Thriller, there's such cast such a huge shadow over, well, everything that Michael Jackson did, but especially Off the Wall. Off the Wall was a tremendous success.
It was, and you know, and it still sounds great today.
Well, I'm an Off the Wall guy. Now, I do want to mention in the book, Kit, you have a chapter where you go toe-to-toe with those two albums.
Indeed.
Where you go detail by detail, okay, it's Off the Wall versus Thriller, which is the better one? And you go back and forth and you read it all. And then at the end, Kit, you go, you make up your own mind.
Yeah. You know, and I know, and I wasn't saying that just to wimp out. Because really, you know, as I went through that point, because at first I was going to say, oh, Off the Wall. You know, because I love Off the Wall. That was one of the earliest albums I ever bought. I still listen to it. It's fantastic. So at first I was like, well, you know, I'm probably going to go with Off the Wall. But when I started comparing them, I was like, well, but you can say this about Thriller that you can't say about Off the Wall. And I started kind of going back and forth.
It's a great chapter, Kit. It really is. It's fun to read. And it's interesting, all the points that you make. You go song by song. You go, the impact that it made, everything historically. I got to tell you, though, Kit, I'm an Off the Wall guy.
I know, and it is wonderful. As I said, it's absolutely timeless.
Yeah.
You know, it still sounds great today.
Yeah. After Thriller, again, how do you follow that up? And he did things outside, you know, after Thriller, you know, he was part of We Are the World, which was, you know, huge and detailed in the book as well. We don't have really time to get into that. But he followed that up with Bad. Bad was also a huge success. And things started to change in terms of production. At that point, when they made Bad, he began to, like, question Quincy Jones and do things a little bit differently than Quincy Jones would have wanted.
He did. You know, he wanted to incorporate, you know, he wanted Bad to sound as modern as possible. You know, he wanted to take advantage of all the technology, the synthesizers, you know, that were available at the time. And Quincy, at the time, wanted him to veer more toward hip-hop by Bad.
Right.
You know, and Michael was very resistant to it. You know, he just, at that point, wasn't convinced that hip-hop was going to be that long-lasting. And so after Bad, they decided, I mean, they didn't have a huge fight or anything, but they, you know, I think part of it, too, was that Michael was starting, you know, that the student was starting to surpass the teacher.
Right.
And, you know, whereas Off the Wall, particularly, Michael was the eager student.
Right.
You know, so I think the relationship changed that way. Now, of course, once he got into the 90s, he started saying, you know, his hip-hop was ruling the charts.
Yep.
So then he decided to start incorporating it into his music.
And all these changes that happen in his career are documented beautifully in the book. You know, we don't have enough time to get into all of the stuff, but I highly recommend that people read this book, Michael Jackson FAQ, All That's Left to Know About the King of Pop. And it goes all the way through posthumous stuff as well. Really brilliantly researched and written. I do want to say a few things very quickly. I love the fact that you include the chapter on the influence of Gothic in the world of Michael Jackson, both in his videos, his films, and his music. And it was a really nice examination and exploration of that in the book. And that's why I started watching Ghosts.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's it's a fascinating thing. I you know, I just always wondered, why was he so fascinated by that?
Yeah, and that's all in there as well. A really, really terrific book, and you should be really proud of it, and I hope everybody goes out and gets a copy. And also check out Songs We Were Singing, guided tours through the Beatles' lesser-known tracks. That's out there, too. And you have a website at kitotool.com.
Right.
And we have a link on our Facebook page, facebook.com/NickDShow. Listen, Kit, keep in touch. Maybe we'll have you back on, you know, to talk more Beatles specifically, okay?
Hey, anytime.
All right, Kit. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Nick.
All right, take care. Kit O'Toole, author of the Michael Jackson FAQ, All That's Left to Know About the King of Pop. Terrific writer. It's a great book. Trust me on this. It's a terrific book, and I'm not even that big a Michael Jackson fan, and I tore through it, had a great time with it, and was looking stuff up online and watching videos and listening to songs that I'd never heard before. A tremendous book. If you're a Michael Jackson fan, if you know a Michael Jackson fan, this is a great Christmas gift and a must-have book for anybody who digs Michael Jackson. All right, we'll take a break here. It is me, Nick DiGilio, on 720 WGN.